始まるざますよ。
行くでガンス。
ふんが。
まともに始めなさいよ。
This is Anime Diet Radio episode number 27, and I think this is the third time that I'm going to have to say the sexy is back, but somehow the third time just doesn't quite feel so right anymore. I'm your newly endowed host again, Michael Huang.
And this is Raymond Hugh, and Taipei is still full of cults.
And this is Jeremy from Redondo Beach, wondering exactly how Mike thinks he's endowed.
Well, the means by which I have been endowed once more is that my mixer was in fact broken. That was what happened the past several episodes, that I couldn't get the microphone up, and so I had to...
He said he couldn't get it up.
And so I had to take the mixer down to the dealer and get it repaired, and now, this week, just a few days ago in fact, it arrived fresh and brand new, and now it's working again.
Dealer is this word for pimp.
It's always good, Mike, to take your equipment down and have your knobs fiddled with to get it working again.
Yes, yes indeed. And this time it didn't even need a lot of adjusting. And so, it's been a while since we've been back, partly for that reason, partly because I'm still looking for work and everybody's been busy, and because of scheduling issues. But we are back, and it's actually bright and early here on Saturday morning for Jeremy and I. It's actually 9:18 a.m. And tell them what time it is in Taipei, Ray.
It's 12:22 a.m., baby. It's time to party, son.
That's right. Let's hope that nobody falls asleep while we're here recording today at Anime Diet Radio Studio Headquarters on the internet.
Let's just hope the audience doesn't fall asleep.
Son, I had a few shots of Southern Comfort. I ain't going to sleep, son. I'm well and nice buzz.
Yes.
And indeed. Some Jim Beam, too.
Oh, you only get to take the good stuff, don't you, Ray?
Uh-huh. And don't forget that bourbon.
I'm from Tennessee. I don't know if... I guess only there maybe the Jim Beam might consider the good stuff, but...
Oh, I was being sarcastic. Matt schooled me.
And you know only Koreans love Southern Comfort, right?
I actually don't know about Southern Comfort. I just heard Jim Beam and I just had to say, oh, that's the good stuff, isn't it?
I don't have a problem with Southern Comfort, but yeah. that's just my Southern roots talking, so...
Yeah,
you know, the two of us just schooled you on Southern alcohol, Jeremy.
Really?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Well, get your ass over here to the other side of the globe, and we'll see about that.
All right, guys. We do have a pretty good show for you lined up today. We've got three news items. I am particularly interested in talking about the final news item, but you're just going to have to wait and see what it is. And finally, our roundtable today is going to be about several new shows that we've seen this season, and I think we've definitely have a promising season ahead of us. And those of you, of course, who've been keeping up with the website have seen us blog about many, many, many different shows. And it's just a taste of the variety that you're going to find in this episode, this 27th episode of Anime Diet Radio.
And you know the best news is? Mike's blogging about BL shows have dropped.
Yeah, I haven't done even one shoujo this season. So, take that, Ray.
I said BL.
The two things usually go together. But you'll be surprised who we'll be talking about the BL show today. In either case, why don't we go ahead and move on to our first news item. You are listening to Anime Diet Radio, episode number 27. As As you know, everything about me is about Evangelion. I see. I wanted to preempt Ray there, because usually he's the one who shouts it out. And,
you wake up in the morning and you have Ayanami Ray cakes. What the hell?
Yes, Ayanami Ray desserts. We talked about that in a previous episode, didn't we? Yes. And the thing is that I've been eagerly awaiting the next installment of the remake film series. The Evangelion 1.0 came out last year, and I finally got to see it several months ago, and I really enjoyed it. And so I was looking forward to Evangelion 2.0, which was originally supposed to come out around now, actually. But it's been delayed, according to the news sources. It's been delayed until what's said to be early summer 2009, next year. But the thing, of course, is the titles. The English subtitles of these movies, which I've always found rather curious. The first film was called You Are Not Alone, the not being placed in parentheses for some really odd reason. My guess, it's some sort of postmodern Anno thing in which you can read the title either with or without the not, and even though they mean completely opposite things when you do. But I think the new one just absolutely tops it, if you ask me. The new one is called You Can Not Advance!
You know, I have to say, when I saw this title, because basically I was not aware of the title until this article came out, and the title of the article is talking about how that it's not going to come out till early summer of 2009, and it says you can, and then it has in parentheses not advance, and I seriously thought somebody just added that in there. I didn't make the connection to the original title, but I just thought that was absolutely hilarious. And what a fitting irony that that's the name of the title.
Yeah.
No, but can you imagine if your college professor just loves like this movie so much, and on the first day say, "Good news, guys, you cannot advance," and the silence in the class will be like. Actually, I'll do that one better. You know that they have the joke on the internet for Lord of the Rings. And basically when Gandalf say, "You shall not pass." And can you imagine Mike's theology professors who loves that movie so much? And you say, "Good news, guys, you shall not pass."
Indeed. It's like, what the heck is Anno thinking there, in a way?
Right,
like,
right.
I mean, really.
Maybe it's a marketing ploy.
Yeah.
You cannot advance, nor can this movie.
Yeah. Does it mean that, like, Anno has completely regressed, and so, like, you know, saying that, no, he can't advance beyond his, like, being Shinji or something? I mean, I actually get a feeling that's actually half true, because, my guess is that, you know, it's probably going to have a storyline where some really bad stuff happens, and Shinji probably becomes his whiny self once more. And
I sing you.
I just might have to do that. I just might end up doing that if I watch it again. Who knows?
Oh.
Maybe that's what he's trying to do to me.
Oh, yeah.
Though
you got to make more sacrifices on the Anno Shrine. Yeah. I told you, man. He watches over every EVA fan. You know that. EVA tart.
And the second movie supposedly is not only going to feature Asuka and, you know, EVA Unit 2, but it has new Evangelions. Added items previously unknown to anyone.
Oh.
And a shocking new story and new visuals.
Yeah, they all say that.
Oh, God. George Lucas said that. Oshi probably said that, like, in his dreams.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know what would be really, really awesome in Mike's dream? Like, you have two tsunderes. You have Asuka, and you have someone played by, what's her name? Kugimiya Rie.
Okay. So, Rie Kugimiya and Asuka walk into a bar, and me,
Is that supposed to be a start of a joke?
where's the punchline in that, Mike? It sounds interesting. You almost got me.
It probably ends with a whip. That's all I know.
Hey, that's actually funny.
I have no idea how to get there. It's like number one, Rie Kugimiya. Number two, Asuka. Number three, ? Number four, whip. 5, profit. In either case, So what do you think is the existential significance of putting parentheses around the not in the title?
I hate to even try and analyze that personally. Yeah. I cannot figure it out.
Yeah. I really can't figure it out either, to be honest, because if you look at the first film, for instance, You Are Not Alone is in fact the theme of the movie. It's like that's like the lesson Shinji learns by the end of the movie. And and so I've always felt that the knot sort of made it superfluous in a way, and it made it somewhat confusing. And so if it's going to follow the trend of the first film, it means that the knot is ultimately what is important, right? Mm-hmm. And so when the title is You Cannot Advance, yeah, my guess is that somebody's going to go through some sort of emotional regression or at least stagnation in the next mm-hmm. movie. Probably mm-hmm. Shinji, maybe Misato, mm-hmm. maybe Kaji gets killed or something like that, and that's going to turn into a huge, incredible breakdown for Misato or something. I don't know.
Well, maybe making the audience.
Exactly. It's going to send me back. Like, when did I get into this show about? I can't believe it. It's almost been 9 years since I first saw Evangelion.
Wow.
That's how long I've been a fan, basically. About 9 years. Wow.
Oh, my God. Did you know that most Taiwanese temples only last 3 years, like a small business?
Really?
Your shrine has last 9 years.
Yes. And Anno better not disappoint me, or otherwise I'm burning that entire shrine down to the ground.
Okay, you've heard it here, folks.
Yes.
So if he's disappointed, he has to burn his Anno shrine down.
Yeah. And bad things might happen to you, Mr. Anno.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Anyway, why don't we go ahead and move on to the next music?
Yes, let's do.
Shall not pass!
First, Darker Than Black. Then, Code Geass. Then, Meramite. And now, Kanagi. The next anime to be taken over by Pizza Hut Incorporated.
Dun dun.
Pizza Hut of Japan has announced on Tuesday that Kanagi is the latest anime to get a promotional tie-in with the pizza restaurant chain, according to Anime News Network. And in this particular case, they include things like a free promotional video for the anime, and apparently you can get free ringtones, wallpapers, and if you order a pizza online through November 9th, you will get a postcard with the cast, the female cast of Kanagi, enjoying a fresh, hot, delicious box of Pizza Hut pizza.
Do you get anything wood for topping?
Unfortunately not.
Spicy wood chip flavor.
Oh.
It's all the rage in Japan.
15 randomly selected online customers will receive copies of dialogue recording scripts. Oh, that's pretty interesting.
Oh.
The first volume of the manga, advertising posters, the opening theme song, CD single, and a fan club card of Nagi, the main heroine, all signed by their seiyus. And so at least in this particular case, Pizza Hut is not actually in the anime, unlike with both Darker Than Black and Code Geass. I just don't know what it is about Pizza Hut. I think they're really trying to turn into the Sprite of anime, the way that Sprite, you know, became really popular in hip-hop and basketball, like, stars in the 90s. Like, the two of them almost really went together. I actually watched a video about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like they want to associate themselves with otakus in Japan. I'm not sure why they would want to, but there they are.
They basically want, you know, all animes to become Pizza Hutted or to become their pizza sluts.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So that's because a lot of anime watchers are also computer geeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was actually really funny. I think Ray, you saw the Lucky Star OVA, right?
Yes.
Wasn't there a scene in the MMORPG part of it where somebody hit a keystroke and they actually ordered pizza?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, see? Yeah, exactly. I think they tapped into the psyche of the modern-day otaku right there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wonder, this would be an interesting thought. Who was the first pizza company to start doing online orders? Hmm. And was it in here or Japan? And it seems like a big push of this is that ordering pizzas online. And that would be, anything that you can order online would be very, I don't know, be a good entryway for the otaku fan base, like you said, since they're big time into computer games and stuff like that. I mean, how easy to order a pizza online as opposed to have to actually talk to somebody on the phone and have to use any kind of social skills.
Exactly.
I know. You know,
the guy comes to the door, you shove the money under the door, and the guy takes it and he leaves, and then you take the pizza. He doesn't know how to see you.
Indeed. That sounds like heaven to me, man.
Yay.
Or a Home Alone.
Are you not advancing, Mike? Are you regressing here? What's going on?
I just don't like dealing with the pizza guy. Oh. Or any guy altogether. Or anyone.
Well, I mean, I and this is not a jab at anybody, but I think the thing is, it does make it difficult is oftentimes the pizza guy doesn't speak very good English. So, you know, you can't really have much of a conversation with him. You just kind of hand him the money and the tip, and he smiles and says the one or few words he knows in English, like, thank you.
And that's good enough for me.
Here's your sausage pizza.
Yeah, your big sausage pizza.
You know, and I got to say on that note, since we're going down that road, since you took it there, I got to think it's pretty funny that Kanagi, a.k.a. Crazy Shrine Maidens, as the manga at least is called, is being sponsored by the Pizza Man. So the Crazy Shrine Maidens are being sponsored by the Pizza Man. Doesn't that sound like a porn title? I don't know.
Yes, it does.
It really does.
The Crazy Shrine Maidens order pizza. Big sausage pizza.
And they're having a party at the shrine.
Yeah. It's all in that postcard, folks. It's all in that postcard.
I don't know. It's so wrong. We probably shouldn't have gone there, but, you know. You guys start the charge, so I blindly follow like the sheep that I am.
Always take the charge. Always charge head first and whole body into it. Seriously.
And so the Crazy Shrine Maidens. I haven't seen more than one like Shrine Maiden in the show yet so far. I mean, and she's not even really a Shrine Maiden. She's actually the goddess that the shrine is supposed to honor.
She's a goddess of wood.
Apparently. Yeah, she was made out of a tree. Yeah. She was made out of wood. And
so when you have wood, you have goddess, and we have girlfriend.
Right. She's made out of wood, so like Pinocchio with breast.
Well, except her nose is...
I had to bring it down to a really disturbing visual that basically, you know, turned everybody off at this point. It's, too much talking about crazy shrine maidens might get a lot of our audience excited.
Yeah. I think they know their fetishes out there, all of you out there listening. And so I was always actually wondering. I actually own the first 9 episodes of Code Geass on DVD, and I was wondering whether – I was half expecting a pizza coupon to, like come out of there too, like packed inside the thing. But apparently I don't think the American branch of Pizza Hut cares to associate itself with anime nearly as much.
No sausage pizza for you?
Apparently not. And we all know that Yukana likes those greasy stuffed crust pizzas too, so. And
okay, but these are good.
Yeah, and those are good, I have to admit. They're good. Even though they're bad, they're really good. Just like certain movies. They're so bad, they're good. So any of you who are living in Japan out there, if you spend $14 on your pizza or more, you will get that postcard.
$5.36.
Yes. And so, anyway, why don't we go ahead and move on to the next news section?
Yeah. Speaking of introverted, disturbed, Pizza Hut craving otaku neats. Yes. We come to our next news item.
Japanese woman charged with plotting to kill over manga collection, according to Anime News Network. That's their headline. A 36-year-old unemployed Japanese woman was charged on Wednesday for allegedly asking for help in killing her parents after they had asked her to clear out part of her manga collection from their home. Now, this is not just any manga collection, before you get the wrong idea. Apparently, she had in fact written on 2chan on September 7th that she wanted to kill her parents because she had taken up 3 rooms. Yes, 3 whole rooms of her parents' home with several thousand manga volumes and numerous videotapes.
Wow. She's my heroine.
Yeah, and she is apparently the second oldest daughter because apparently her parents wanted her to clear just one room because her older sister was going to move back in. 40-year-old older sister. And, well, apparently some people, conscientious people on Tuchan, saw the post online and reported her to the authorities, and she has been arrested.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, at least now she's leaving the nest.
Not exactly the way I'm sure most people imagine leaving the nest. I'm sorry, though. Yeah. It's just kind of so strange, in a way. I mean, three whole rooms of manga and videotapes. For some reason, I just can't imagine that unless it's a store. I mean, how much money do you think was sunk into there?
Somebody said in the forum that with all that manga money and all that video money, she could probably get her own home.
I bet she could. Yeah. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Like, and this was interesting. Notice, 36-year-old unemployed Japanese woman. Mm-hmm. Like, where did she get all the money for this manga? See, I blame the parents, okay? Because they're sitting here giving her all this money to buy manga and to fill up three rooms. She wouldn't have been able to fill up those three rooms if they hadn't had it forked over all the money for her to buy the manga. And then they want to try to go back and say, yeah, you need to clean up this room so your sister can come in and leech off us too. I don't know. You know, you're setting yourself up for failure right there. You know? If she doesn't want to kill you, somebody else will for your bad parenting. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh. Well, I think in the case of the older sister, on a slightly more serious note, I'm you know, notice how the ages of these women, and probably also, you know, guess how probably how old the parents are.
Yeah. Totally.
The oldest daughter was probably moving in, like, you know, I bet she probably has a job and everything like that to take care of her elderly parents. That's what Asian children are supposed to do when their parents grow old.
I'm not so sure about that. This is Japan. Lots of women get just simply quit their jobs after they got married. Maybe she divorced.
That's actually also perfectly possible. And so, yeah, we don't know the exact situation, unfortunately. A lot of information is in Tuchan, which is in Japanese, which I cannot read. And not yet, anyway. And, yeah, I mean, it did sort of remind me almost of a thing you would actually see on Welcome to the NHK, like a show like that.
I just wonder how serious she was, too. I mean, you know, because I think the possibility that concern might have been, she might have been so detached from reality that she really didn't understand the real consequences of trying to, you know, instigate somebody, you know, killing her parents. But, you know, I just wonder, like, how serious she actually was.
Yeah.
She obviously, you know, not very social. She could have been just, you know, airing her grievances or gripes with her parents online. I mean, I don't think it's a smart thing to do.
This is especially in the wake of, you know, the stabbings in Akihabara, right?
Absolutely. Everybody's all tight about it.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you, though, if somebody finds a death note in her drawer, then we all know why.
Yes, we do. I just recently saw a forum thread with apparent, like, you know, it was basically what remained of an apartment that was rented to somebody, like, you know, who hadn't been heard from a month. And it was like the filthiest thing that I've ever seen. It was like enormous stacks of pizza boxes, getting back to our second these item, and fast food containers and everything like that, just strewn about everywhere. And it was like,
wow,
really hideous.
I'm looking at my place right now.
And no, I mean, it was unlivable. Like, I have no idea how it could, like, you should have seen the picture of the bathroom. I mean, there are people out there like that who really literally live in filth like that. And I don't know.
Where are the Fab Five when we need these guys?
Exactly. Though I think they only work on men, right?
Oh.
We're talking about the Queer Eye guys.
Right. Yeah.
And so I don't know. You know, my guess is that, yeah, she was probably not terribly social, you know, and often, you know, something to that obsessive degree, there's also probably some kind of mental disorder attached to that. And that's not something that necessarily we want to make fun of or tease.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, it's like that was probably the case with the woman who left behind that horrifically filthy apartment I just mentioned. It was.
Yeah, it's odd to, you know, I mean, even to borderline otakus as ourselves, you know, that you know, a big part of our life is anime, but it's not so much to the point that, you know, we fill up three rooms in a house that doesn't belong to us, you know, and then get pissed so much to the point that we want to kill somebody when they ask us to move our stuff. You know, it's like, why did she ask her parents for, like, money for a storage, you know, unit or something? I don't know. I mean,
She could start a library.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
I know. You know, it does really, on a final note, I does actually remind me of a very particular scene in Welcome to the NHK where Sato, the main character, you know, in one of his clearer mental moments, he actually imagines what it would be like if he continued his lifestyle all the way up until the age of 40. And he's still living at home with his parents. And we see his aging parents trying their best to get along with their son. And he's this incredibly fat, obese person lying around in his filth, you know, munching in front of a computer, like an addicted to an MMORPG. And
wow, I'm looking at my stomach right now.
And the thing is that it's really hideous. And it really scares him and terrifies him. And, like, you know, it makes him wake up at least for that one moment that he has to change something about himself. And so I really, you know, hope anyone who's listening out there who is even 1% on the way to that level, you know, that's something, you know, I think we need to remind. It's when an anime and a manga reminds you of that, I think it's probably time to wake up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, see, here at Anime Diet, we're not only a entertainment site, we're an outreach. So if you are struggling with these issues, please contact us at animediet.wecare.com.
Operators are standing by.
Don't forget to click that button, too.
Yes. Why don't we go ahead and move on to our roundtable?
Well, that's the roundtable. We dance where we're able. We do routines and border scenes and footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Finally, we have our usual roundtable, and for the first time, we're actually going to be talking about the fall 2008 season. And we've actually got two shows coming up that we're going to actually be talking about, all three of us together, because we've seen them all. And, of course, each one of us is going to talk about one show that we're blogging or liking or otherwise just watching. And so we're going to be talking here, I think, about EF. Ray will be talking about God Ray Zero. Jeremy will be talking about Kuro Shitsuji. Okay, all three of us will be talking about Kurozuka and Chaos Head. So, without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about EF, A Tale of Melodies. I actually just wrote my second entry on that show just last night. And so I've seen up to episode 2. EF, A Tale of Melodies, of course, is the sequel. The sequel to EF, A Tale of Memories, which I voted as the best show of 2007. And it is really more or less just continuing with what EF was doing last time. Different stories, different focus on different characters, like basically Renji, the really whiny kid that played Rocky in Claymore, has now been reduced to whiny comic relief.
Yay!
Yeah. Basically, I think in the second episode, one of the main girls actually... how do I say this without people misunderstanding it? Strips him naked and he's really embarrassed. So he could take his clothes to the laundry. And we see him cowering and blushing and running away. Shinji-like. I mean, we had an entire season that was half about him. And this is what he's been reduced to in season 2. Yeah.
Okay, let me get this straight. Some girl actually comes onto you, which never happens in real life or why in a quintillion years, strip you, and you are embarrassed, Mike.
And so, yeah, it's exactly the sort of thing that I imagine might even happen to me one day, I suppose. But no. The thing is that he's not the focus.
Revelations, man, revelations.
But in either case, he is certainly not the focus of the show. We don't even see the girl that he was, like, I guess, dating in the first season, Chihiro, who has an even more annoying voice. And but we do see her guardian, what's his name? Yu. And we see him especially...
No, me? Really?
Yes, Yu. His name is Yu. Yu, Y-U-U. Yes, Y-U, but...
Can we move on, please?
Yu-kun. Yu-kun is the guardian of Chihiro in the first season. He seems really angsty. He wears black. And he likes to hang out in the church, turning on goth fangirls everywhere. And, well, he's apparently... We find out a lot about his teenage years. And so he's the first main guy, and the other main guy is actually Renji's neighbor, Kuze, and he likes to play violin secretly. And it's the blonde girl, Mizuki, who is trying to cheer him up, I guess. I was about to say come on to him, because that's what it looks like sometimes. But it's... And so those are the two main focuses of EF. And I think stylistically, it's very still very similar, and I think it's taking a little while for the story to warm up and, like, the themes to come together. Like, I think the musical theme... Like, you know, the first one was called A Tale of Memories, and so they talk a lot about memory and memory loss. And in this one, it's A Tale of Melodies, and so you get these musical motifs, like fermatas and metronomes and things like that, and a guy playing violin and classical music. It's not really quite hanging together yet, as of episode two. But, of course, I have to remember that it took several episodes for me really to warm up to EF. And all I have to do is to remember that. I remember at Soufflé, we showed the first couple episodes of EF to the club, and I couldn't help but hear the snickering. It really is a kind of an acquired taste. And so really, it's definitely a show I want to continue blogging because I like the first season so much. And, well, I really do enjoy that sort of artsy, fartsy sort of thing because the artiness waves are really taking on, and it gives me an excuse to write 5-page long blog essays. Anyway, Ray, why don't you go ahead and talk about Gare Zero?
Now, there's a show that was surprising. Ha, 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 ha.
Indeed.
But if you like Kill 'Em All Tomino, oh yeah, you love the first episode, especially the end. You'd be cheering like, yeah, bitch, take them all out.
Yeah, is that a little too much of a spoiler? I don't know. But in either case,
it's the first episode. It's got to happen anyways.
Yeah.
You know, I think you can be actually even more specific, Ray. Because I think it might intrigue people. Because that was the thing that interested me about that show, is that it was such a shocker. It was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, like, the overall, when I started watching the show, the first thing I noticed was that the pacing was awesome.
Oh.
There wasn't a cold moment. There wasn't a moment where you're going, There was that, oh, wow, you know, like, everything seems to matter. And everything they did, and one thing went to another and went to another.
Yeah, the action was really well directed and really well animated too, and it was really, I mean, here's the thing, Matt, you know, Matt's our action reviewer in a way, and he said, you know, he was enthralled the whole time, and he said actually it's the best thing he's seen all season, and yeah, the ending blew him away too, and yeah. all three of us have seen episode one, and I have to say it is definitely the model of how to start a show with a bang.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a really good show. I don't know if I'd agree with it's the best thing all season yet, but I think it really is has a strong presence and is a strong contender for one of the highest rated shows in my book for this season.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you describe just a little bit about the plot?
I suppose this is stem of Japanese ghosts and supernatural natural legends. But, you know, like, Tokyo is somehow being invaded by supernatural monsters. So you have two competing agencies trying to fight them off. One of them is the self-defense agency, and the other one is the environmental agency. I guess one of them sees as threats, the other one sees as garbage.
It's the EPA with guns!
Oh, wow. They could definitely use that in Taiwan, man, but... So basically, you know, like the first episode was focused on the self-defense agency folks, and they were kicking ass, and they had spiritual powers, and hasta la vista, baby.
And then they all get killed, right?
Okay, see, I didn't say that. You just said that. You just said
it. No, I mean, in the first, like, 5 minutes, like, they get there, because the SDF's, like, original defense force... Like
You mean the other team, the team that people that look like troopers? Yes, they get killed.
Yeah, those guys. Well, they always get killed. They're cannon fodder. Every show has them. If they were on Star Trek, they would wear red shirts. And so,
yeah, they wore it's all funny, black, though. By the way.
It's funny though. They do give the illusion that they're kind of somewhat have the situation handled.
Right. Until the big monster comes.
I call it the tie that binds, because then episode you all watched episode two already, right? Well, I'm not going to say much about it. Just somebody comes back from the past. And, you know, like, and then there's some sort of, I guess, relationship stuff that was going on, and, you know, like, this person, and, you know, that some sort of tie that binds people, and, you know, it kind of expands, and right now it's still pretty chaotic as to what's going on here. But one thing is clear is they're all getting killed.
Yeah, there's a lot of carnage.
Yes, there definitely is. And I believe, actually, I think I read some news that many TV stations are, in fact, censoring some of the violence.
What's the point?
Yeah.
If you can watch the Fist of North Star manga in the 80s, you shouldn't censor your kids. Seriously. Now that, it was bloody.
Yeah, that it is definitely pretty bloody, though I think by anime standards, it's only slightly above average.
It's tame.
Do you have any criticisms of that show, Ray?
Gare Zero?
Gare Zero? What I don't like is that, you know, the first episode you start caring about these people and they just all go. And yep. The next episode, all of a sudden you're pulling these other guys. It's a little bit disorienting, I'll have to say. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing was extremely, like, confusing, but you're like, okay, everybody in the first episode dies, and then it doesn't seem like anybody's gonna come back. And you're like, what the fuck was the point of them being there in the first place?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And did you notice, too, at the end, that, how did you feel about the ending sequence, too? Did you feel like, as far as a cap-off, like the ending credits?
It was just like, oh, so you're shocked, so we're going to let you stay in shock.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're just going to go like, oh, nothing happened, else happens. It's like,
Yeah. That's what was interesting about it, is that there's no, you know, because even in like some of the most dramatic series, you have like this ending credit sequence that is kind of like, it becomes familiar throughout the series and kind of has a calming effect in many aspects. Yeah, it'd be like a melodramatic song, or maybe an upbeat kind of gives you a sense of comfort. Nothing at the end of this. It's just black with a song I think it has like an instrumental or something in the background. Yeah. And then just like text.
No, it didn't. It only had a sound effect, like those like.
Oh, sound effect. Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Just a burning fire.
It's very cinematic, I think.
Yeah.
And they're trying to go for that effect. Actually, if I recall, there's no opening song either, is there? It's.
No, there hasn't been thus far. There wasn't in the first episode. You said you didn't see the second, and I can't remember if there is in the second. I don't remember. It must not have been very exciting.
Right.
That's the other thing. The music in this, the music in this show really doesn't play that much big of a role, at least not for me.
Actually, I thought the soundtrack was pretty decent, like in the show itself. But we don't see any OP or ED, like in this one.
It's kind of. And there's also no preview.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For the next show.
I think they want to leave you in maximum suspense and shock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting.
I mean, shock works sometimes. I think it works in this one. But there's only so much you can do with that, I think, before it just starts turning into M. Night Shyamalan. And so.
So let's let Ray have the last word on this, since this technically is his.
Yeah.
Oh, I simply recommend the show because I don't find anything confusing at all. And, you know, like I said, you want to see what happens and all that. But I think the basic plot is probably a lot simpler than, you know, anybody imagined. Mm-hmm. So that's that. I do recommend it, though.
Mm-hmm. Good. Cool. Thanks, Ray.
All right.
No problem.
Jeremy, why don't you talk about your show?
Okay. Yes. You know, because I'm just such a big fan of the BL.
Mike, that's your chance to come back.
My show is Kuroshich Tsuji, aka Black Butler. I don't know, that title sounds kind of weird, but especially in the context of BL. it really seemingly thus far isn't so much about the BL. It seems like it has some elements. I mean, I've never looked at the manga. I wasn't familiar with the story at all before I watched it, and currently I've only seen the first episode. I'm not sure if the second has actually been released yet. I am kind of anxious to see that, though. The premise is pretty interesting to me. Not atypical, but basically the deal is the main character, Seal, Phantom Hive, he's a 12-year-old kid who's the last surviving member of his family. His parents have died. He is the heir to his family's estate. Apparently, it appears that he's come close to death or dying or died, and therefore he makes a pact with a demon, a contract, to be bound to this demon and have him, I guess, resurrect him and protect him and help him basically head up his household now. And therefore the demon that he makes a contract with is a character by the name of Sebastian Michaels, aka the Black Butler. He is the butler of the household. Yep, mm-hmm. Sebastian. And his bodyguard. And he basically is able to keep everything in check in the household as far as the duties of the keeping the house in order, because all the other wait staff are completely incapable, just to say the least. I mean, there's the other characters are Bard, the household cook, who really can't cook in many respects. The gardener Finian, who basically tends to kill most of the foliage off. And Marion, who is a very clumsy, typical maid with the, you know, thick glasses, a very clumsy character.
We've seen those.
Tends to drop and break everything, stuff like that. But the only other character is a Tanaka, who is the house steward. You really don't see him do anything except chilling and being very calm when everybody's freaking out, drinking a cup of tea. And actually, he's the only one that Sebastian tends to tell like he's doing a good job. So there's a lot of comedy in it, but the comedy is very much contrasted with very dark elements. The first episode involves a character who comes to visit Seal with business intentions, so to speak. And basically you see as Seal negotiates with him and gets a feel for what his true intention is, him dragging him into basically this dark web of, how can I say, I don't know how to describe it without totally giving it away. It's really just this he's playing this game with him that is a really dark, disturbing game where, like, if you progress so far on the board and land on one of the first things he lands on is a spot where it says basically your legs get cut off. You can only move half the number of spaces. And this all ties into, like, his overall plan in dealing with this character. And so it's very, very different. I'm still, like I said, I've only seen the first episode. I'm still kind of getting the feel of you know, what's going on here, but I have to say I was really intrigued and really drawn in by the mixture of comedy and I wouldn't be really call it horror, but you know, along those lines.
It's sinister and it's funny.
Yeah, definitely. And I have to say that the animation in it, the artwork is really good. Nice use of color. Terrific drawing style, in my opinion. And they transition from the comedic caricatures to the very, you know, glossy, highly produced, dark, ethereal sort of characters really well. And so it's just a weird transition between comedy and sinister, like, as Mike said.
Wow.
So I really, you know, and the only thing is, this is the first episode, so the rest of it could totally go to crap and become this total BL fest, which, you know, I'm just not really into. If you're into that sort of thing, great, whatever. Right now, it seems interesting enough to very much intrigue me to watch some more and be decently excited about it.
Right.
Actually, you know, there's a hint that is probably going to get some BL in there. The butler's name is Sebastian.
Right. Yeah.
That's a very stereotypical name for a butler in anime, right? It's like
in BL. Yeah. In BL. Or in shoujo anime.
Oh, okay.
In BL anime, I'm sorry. Not even shoujo anime. Oh. I heard.
I see. I was about to ask you how you heard, but
anyhow, this is you know one of the few I'll watch things, you know, even if they have, I'm not particularly fond of those elements. If they have those elements, if it's not overbearing to the story and you have an interesting enough story,
right? It was like Himitsu last season, a couple of seasons ago, right? Right. It had very very mild overtones, but most of the focus was on the mystery
It was a good
solving
story.
Cases. Yeah. And so, anyways, I think we have a couple of shows we all want to talk about now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we want to talk about Kurozuka, which I think so far is definitely, right off the bat anyway, the best show of the season so far. Mm-hmm. And
Definitely. One of the top shows. I think it's, I would wager to say thus far, it's jockeying for my favorite position.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was actually Ray who recommended it to me, and he urged me to watch it, and I did, and I liked it. So, yes. And kind of a brief description of Kurozuka, basically, is... actually, we talked a little bit about it at the end of the last episode, I believe. Actually, Jeremy, you were the one who was describing it. It's basically about a woman who cannot die, and she takes along a swordsman with her. And I think they're going to actually be traveling to various time periods in the future, all the way into the future, like beyond our time, like if I remember correctly, because I know there's an early scene in the first episode where you see him fighting in the ruins of a modern city, but it starts in the 12th century of Japan.
Right.
And you get some very nice bloody swordplay, you know, in the classic, you know, anime samurai fashion. But actually, what I'm really interested in is, Jeremy, you said you took a class on...
Yeah, I took a Japanese culture class about 2 years ago, and we studied about no plays. And they make this the connection very evident in the opening sequence of the show, is that it starts out with a scene from the no play, Kurozuka. And
N-O-H.
Oh, N-O-H, yeah. Yes. It's not a play that's not a play. It's N-O-H, which is the ancient Japanese style of plays. It's like the original plays that were put on Japan. And, a lot of the... they would wear these masks over their face to demonstrate if they were, like, onis or whatever. And they're very melodic and simple, and it's a lot of emphasis on movement to tell the story, poses, things like that. But the play Kurozuka this show is a twist off of the idea from the original play Kurozuka, which is basically tells a story of two priests that are traveling in the wilds of Adachi, Japan. And they basically end up at this house in the middle of nowhere and needing a place to stay. And in the house, this lone woman lives there. And they ask her, you know, can we stay in your house for tonight? Because, you know, we need a place to stay, basically. I think in the original story, there might be a storm, too. I can't remember. But... basically, she tells them, you can stay as long as you do not look into my inner room.
That's a very common motif in a lot of ancient storytelling, actually.
Right.
Mythology, that's a very...
And the thing is that this, of course, arouses the suspicion, curiosity of, you know, one of the servants of the priest who... tells him, you know, you should respect her wishes and you shouldn't look in there, but he looks anyways, and inside he finds rotting corpses and bones and all this stuff, and this basically, with this they realize that this woman isn't who she seems to be. She comes back in a rage and turns into her demon form, her holy form.
Yeah.
She awakens.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's...
And basically the rest of the story in the no play involves the priest fighting her but with her prayers and basically getting her to stand down so they can escape. the basic idea of the story is very similar to the first episode of Korzuka, but yeah. has a dramatic shift in the relationships between the characters.
That's really fascinating, yeah. So they just use that as a starting point.
Right, and, a springboard, and gave yeah. this whole other twist. Mm.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a combination of that and the Japanese legend of the Minamotos. Because, mm-hmm. you know, to the Japanese, that's a very ancient time. But, yep. you know, that's still 1100, 1200. To the Chinese, that's not all that ancient. But to them, that was a story of legends.
Right.
That was a time of legends, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And the Minamotos were one of the most famous, I guess, shogunate, perhaps? Mm-hmm. Or those type of institution in the early Japanese history. Hmm. So basically,
Tyros and the Minamotos.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's right. They were fighting each other, and right. basically, you know, the story says, okay, see, the main young man is basically the younger brother of the Minamoto,
mm-hmm.
hmm.
something like that. But you know what I really noticed was that it was Madhouse getting kicked ass serious with the animation.
Oh yeah, very Ninja Scroll like. Other things that are kind of set in medieval Japan that
right.
they're really good at doing that sort of thing. Like Madhouse's track record in general has been is excellent. Like they seem to work on really good projects overall. And I really liked how incredibly I called it in the Twitter an anime with dignity. I don't know because there's just so much little anime that's of that nature. I mean the most recent one I can think of is Shigurui, which is somewhat which is. I think more history based rather than legend based, and that's about the shogunate, the Tokugawa era, the beginning of the Tokugawa era, and it's also very bloody, but it has that more adult feel, and by adult I don't mean mm-hmm. porno feel.
Right. There have been, you know, a few titles like that, you know, have a nice historic reference point, have a lot of interesting connections to historical occurrences, myths, mythologies, things like that, really making it much more thinking anime than
mm-hmm.
overall action. I have to say though that the this show, even though it would lean more towards action, yeah. from what I'm seeing, mm-hmm. but with really good connections to, like I said, the no plays referencing that and the historical elements. But it's a really good balance, I think.
Yeah.
Even though it's more leaning towards action, it is a really clean, very good balance because the action is so good, but it doesn't oversimplify the story.
No,
it
doesn't.
There's a lot of delicate nuance in the atmosphere mm-hmm. and right. mm-hmm. yeah, in the dialogue, and yeah, it's really well done, well written.
Yeah, because I think that's the problem with some of the historical dramas now, which I have a temperament where I can watch many of them. I know a lot of people, and even myself at times, get a little bored with that sort of thing. And I think for, you know, the person that would appreciate both to some degree, I think this is almost as perfect as it can get.
Yeah, it really is. It's
It has excellent atmosphere and shots and cinematic direction.
Yeah, very much so. There's even some hints of surrealism here and there, which is fascinating.
Oh,
yeah, and
that's right.
But in very, very, you know, mild and tasteful ways. It's not overdone.
Right, which, exactly. Yeah,
the way EF sometimes, I think, even overdoes it sometimes.
But it's not like you're seeing a big mouth on a big twisted clock.
Yeah.
Like Dao Li.
Right. It's not that kind of surrealism.
Or a big penis like hanging out from the sky. Whoops.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think the animation quality is really high. They make good use of the technology now. And with staying with a line-drawn look with the benefits mm-hmm. of the technology it's now, as opposed to, in many animes, the mixture. And even, I would say, would have been my criticism of Gabre Zero is that the mixture of the creatures that are very they're computer-generated, CGI, look a little out of place. They're not bad, but they look a little out of place and look a little fake for that world. And I see... none of that here. They have good use of light and shadow for the mm-hmm. different scenes.
Yeah,
it is a more dark show, but it's not. I don't think it's overly dark.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I mean, there's just so many good things pumped into that show that we all highly recommend it, right? It's,
yeah. Yep. I would agree with that statement. Hopefully, and Ray is the only one I think that's seen the... Or, Mike, have you seen the second episode as well?
Not yet.
Okay. I think Ray's the only one that's seen the second episode? Or have you...
Negative. Oh, I downloaded it. Oh, okay. I haven't watched it.
Okay. But it is available, so we don't know that it might not tank later. So, but as far as the first episode, it's coming out of the gates extremely strong.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it is. And so, yeah, why don't we talk about one more show together?
Chaos.
Yes, Chaos Head. Chaos, what is it? Semicolon.
Yes. Gifts.
Yes. Chaos gives head. It's
I thought it would have been really terrible if the main girl's name is Chaos, and the main guy and there's a main guy.
Yeah. I think that would have probably kind of like the way that whole Midori no Hibi concept of a girlfriend appearing on your hand was probably invented just so that you can make certain kinds of jokes. But But we're not going there now. Chaos Head is actually one of the more fascinating shows of the season.
Aww. Right.
And I actually blogged about it. And it's, I think, and I came up with a little tagline for it. It's, welcome to the NHK meets Higurashi meets Satoshi Kon, particularly Perfect Blue. And it's, it's really a very interesting blend of otaku kind of motifs and, because you have the main character who's really, like, a typical otaku. He has, like, figurines. He stays in the little room all by himself.
Yep.
And he even imagines that one of his figurines, Seira-chan, is talking to him.
Exactly.
And so we see scenes of that. And he's pretty much a neat, kind of like the main character in Welcome to the NHK. Well, he's in school, actually.
Yeah, neats don't get out. Neats don't get out, period.
Yeah, let me revise that, actually. He is a shut-in. But he actually still does go to school. He is a high school student.
I thought one of the things that was funny is that in the first episode they addressed the fact that he actually works out a schedule on the days that he has to attend a minimum amount of days.
That's right. You're right. He works out the bare minimum he needs to pass, which is pretty interesting. And the main premise of the show is that he sees a rather cute pink-haired loli seemingly massacre somebody in the street. A Shibuya.
What's a loli?
Well, she's in high school, and she sits next to him at the end of their first episode, and we don't know. And it's like, what's going on? Like, can we believe what his perception of reality at all? I mean,
he's obviously delusional. I mean, he talks to a character that is not there in anime.
Yeah,
loli that is with him in his room, and basically. Is kind of that, in many ways, I think, the voice of, I don't know, well, it varies from reason and basically, and then also keeping him in the delusion. Like, she'll talk about, like, how, like, oh, do you think everybody will, if anybody saw your list, they would actually kind of make fun of you or something like that? Are you doing this? So, in some instances, she acts as, you know, sort of voice of reason, but then also you'll see other times where she basically... leads him to ignore things that actually are reality that affect his life.
Things like his sister, I think. Yeah.
And that steak was actually there. Was there. He grabbed one of the crosses, and that was there.
Yeah. And that's the creepy one of the parts that, you know, were supposed to be creepy.
Right.
Yeah.
And, She basically leads him to believe that it's not really there.
And then there's that weird fangirl. With glasses, who follows him into his room.
Right. Like,
I think she's supposed to be real, but he's, of course, very suspicious of the way that she seems to share the exact same interests as him.
Right. Yeah. The story seems to be told from the perspective that he seems to be in some sort of bizarre Arrow game, Dave Sim visual novel, which this is actually based off a visual novel, which none of us have seen. He realizes... that his life is seemingly now like an Arrow game.
Yeah,
and it's too weird. Like, what's going on? Why does am I imagining this? And so he's basically bouncing back and forth during the first episode of, am I in reality or am I not? Am I losing my mind? And I realize I talked to like a character that isn't there, but this is a certain level of sanity You know?
Yeah.
Have I gone beyond that? You know? And exactly. So it's not really clear if this is actually, he's completely delusional or some of these things are actually really happening.
I mean, like, I actually thought at first his sister wasn't real because she almost acts in some ways like a typical arrow gay little sister.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, and so, yeah, I mean, it was really hard to tell at first what was quite going on in this guy's head. Well, and
I think even now it's still hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they've kind of let the cat out of the bag completely on that.
Yeah.
And hopefully there's some really interesting twist in that that keep the interest generated. Because one of the things is that this premise, as good as it is, could peter out really easily.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
In lesser hands, it could certainly completely screw up. It's one of those things where it's a very ambitious idea, because there's like all these layers of meta, meta reality, that right. involve that. You know, it could just turn into just a huge mess overnight.
This season seems to favor that. Even in another show where Hiyano Aya is in, you know, Akane Iro ni Mas and Saka. And that in that, the male character sometimes imagines things as well.
Hmm.
It's very strange. This Chaos Head is not the only show where the guy is somewhat delusional.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's the one part, you know, that where I compared it to Satoshi Kon stuff, because his movies always feature lots of blurring of the line between reality and fantasy, and where you can't quite tell which is which. It's probably not done so far as artfully as Satoshi Kon would do it.
No.
Not as smoothly. You know, this is anime television, this isn't film, but
right.
I'm still very intrigued by it, because it's a fascinating way to start a story. And yeah, it's like, it's as if he's trapped inside a game.
Yeah.
And we are very likely to find out he probably is, that there is some meta game going on in which he is the main character. There's actually been like a movie recently out in America called Stranger Than Fiction, which that was the premise. A man discovers that he is actually a character inside a novel, and his creator is about to kill him.
That's so funny that you mentioned that. I watched that last night.
Oh, really?
I'd seen it before, but that is by far one of my favorite American movies. I mean, it's extremely well done. But yeah, it is a familiar premise. I think it's a strong premise in that, you know, it's been done, but it hasn't been done well by too many people. And so that if they pull this off, like if they do it well, it could be very interesting. But you know, it seems like a lot of these shows. I mean, is it maybe a sort of a lead in to the Halloween season? Because you know,
it could be. Well, I think we're all agreed that Chaos Head is definitely fascinating. I know some of our readers have expressed concern, at least Martin has expressed some concern, that it may not work necessarily, this blend of moe otaku motifs and sinister stuff. But of course, to that, I would point to Higurashi as an example where it very much does work. But I'm definitely going to see if I can continue blogging the show.
Yeah, you know, as long as he doesn't have a character named Chaos and it's a girl, I think it's something that people should keep watching.
Yes.
No, I think I would agree with the fact that right now it looks good. It's interesting. It's intriguing me and keeping me interested. I'll watch it. But, I mean, they could really screw the pooch on it. So let's just wait and see what happens.
Anyway, without further ado, that is the end of Anime Diet Radio, episode number 27. I'm your host, Michael Huang.
And this is Ray Hugh. I do not recommend anyone else come to Light Taipei and live.
And this is Jeremy from Redondo Beach. Thanks for listening.
See you guys later.